I apologize. We went live at 3 o'clock like we were supposed to, and then we're having some technical difficulties. But we find our way through. We always make it back. So welcome to Unapologetic Live. I hope you're having a fantastic Monday. I'm certainly having a fantastic Monday. Taylor is here as well.
What's up, guys?
So I'm having a great Monday because I found out that Elon Musk bought Twitter this morning for $44 billion, which we are going to get to that and have a discussion surrounding that. But I wanted to just get into this story. We'll talk Elon Musk buying Twitter, and then let's talk broader ideas. What does this mean? Is this really a big deal that people are making it out to be? And is this a sign of the pendulum swinging back our way and the left losing? And we'll sort of go through all the different spheres of influence, where we're winning, where we're losing, what does the left have left to run with? Oh my gosh, that's a tongue twister there. And then we'll talk about how we can mitigate that moving forward. And just see if there's any unifying factors between the two of us. I've been seeing videos on TikTok, of all places, that when I watch them, I can't tell whether or not it's a leftist speaking to me or a conservative, which for me is a really good sign. If it starts to sound like we are on the same page in any way, shape, or form, I can get on board with that. So we'll discuss that at the end of the show today. So first, let's start off with Elon Musk buying Twitter. I made a reel about this earlier. You've probably seen it on YouTube if you're subscribed, which you should be, whether or not you're following on PragerU or on Unapologetic. You should be subscribed to both channels. Halfway through this stream, we're going to cut out and just go over to Unapologetic with Amala, which you guys can type in my name, Amala Benobi, on YouTube, and subscribe there if you want to watch the full stream. Go over to that section. I'll actually be watching the live chat on that channel as well. So, again, I came into work today and got the news that Elon Musk has finally gone through with the $44 billion deal to finally buy Twitter. Now, this is something we went back and forth on, and initially we thought wasn't going to happen, but it looks like due to a mixture of maybe just pressure from the outside and fiduciary responsibility, the board has gone ahead and accepted this offer from Elon. Whoop, whoop. So I have a feeling we're going to see the use of Twitter just skyrocket in a lot of ways in the near future. Now, we've been seeing a decline in Twitter usership, but that might just be due to the fact that people were leaving in droves due to the censorship and everything that was going on in the platform. So I have a feeling we're going to see people coming from Truth Social, from Getter, from Rumble, from all these other alt social media platforms that they switched to because Twitter was not upholding its idea or the American idea of free speech and that principle. And I think people are going to start going over to Twitter, so I'm excited to see it. I've seen some great memes coming out of this. I think there's going to be a lot of Twitter employees that are hopefully leaving in the wake of this news because it's so heartbreaking that we can't censor people anymore and ruin their livelihoods and delete their platforms because we disagree with them. What a horrendous thing to have to deal with. And the amazing tweets of people saying, you know, I'm going to leave the United States if Elon Musk buys Twitter. I love to see just ideology backfire on people because a lot of us, when we were coming out with these complaints about Twitter, talking Section 230, talking about free speech and censorship, we were met with, well, it's a private business and they can do whatever they want, get your own platform, build a new social media, blah, blah, blah. And now you're hearing the same people who said those things going, oh my gosh, I can't believe Elon Musk has bought Twitter and is going to be upholding free speech. What a horrendous thing to do. This is very treacherous. I don't know what the future is going to look like. You know what? It just makes me feel a little warm inside to see all of the L's being taken on the other side of this coin of people who just want nothing more than to never have to see a person that they disagree with ever again. And all the W's on the side of people who enjoy free speech and liberty and are okay with not even just hearing different opinions and seeing people with different opinions, but just allowing them to be on the same platforms as them. What a simple ask that is of a person to just say, can I be on this too? It's a very, very simple ask. And that includes a lot of liberals, some leftists, very few leftists, but some leftists who agree with that principle, and conservatives who have been trying to uphold free speech and say, you know, this is not only a battle for me and my ability to speak freely on these platforms, it's a battle for you. We want all people to be able to talk on these platforms. And Elon put out an amazing tweet after this deal was broken and the news came out and said, you know, something along the lines of, I hope the people who are critiquing me in this deal right now stay on the platform, because I'm fighting for their ability to speak as well. And I think that is a beautiful sentiment. Now, let's get into some of the responses to what has happened today. Of course, we have to check in with Brian Stelter of CNN, because he's just so good at doing his little tap dancing around what he'd actually like to say. And he's so good at packaging this propagandized narrative into words that just make it underneath, you know, what would be a very horrific thing to hear on the news. So here he is responding to Elon Musk buying Twitter.
Look, who knows? I think that's an example of a broader question for Twitter, which is, if you get invited to something where there are no rules, where there is total freedom for everybody, do you actually want to go to that party? Or are you going to decide to stay home? And that's a question for Twitter users. Some Twitter users might love the idea that there's going to be absolutely no moderation and no rules at all. Others might not want to be anywhere near that. Am I crazy, Matt?
No, you're right. And what happens to the advertising? I mean, if there's no moderation or little moderation, do the advertisers stay away? What does that do to the business prospects for Twitter itself?
Right. I think that's very much an... Look.
Okay, pause. Ugh. Okay, first of all, who said there was going to be no rules? Taylor, did you ever hear anybody say there was going to be no rules on Twitter after Elon bought it?
He said it's going to be the Wild Wild West.
Yeah. We're just gunslinging now. We can say whatever we want. We can go and threaten people and say we're going to light things on fire and all this stuff. No, that was never said. All that Elon said is, you know what? We're going to honor people who have different opinions on this platform. And we're going to allow that to come to fruition. And we're going to allow people to say the things that they want. All of a sudden, Brian Stelter's like, there's no rules. There's no regulation. And look at what's underlying about what he's saying. What he's saying is that he doesn't want you to have free speech. He doesn't want there to exist a social media platform where everybody and anybody is free to express their opinions, their views, their beliefs, and their values. Because what a horrendous, horrendous society we would be living in if that's the case. What a pro-American society we would be living in if that's the case. And you have to tap dance around saying that, because if he outright said, I don't support free speech, I imagine people wouldn't take that so well. So now we get to say things about, well, would you want to be invited to a party that honors your freedom and allows you to do whatever you want? Yeah.
I only like going to parties where I'm told what to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're not allowed to do anything except what the people throwing the party allow you to. Those are the funnest kind of parties.
Yeah. When I throw a party at my house, before people walk in, they have to sign a contract that they were A, going to say their pronouns before they walk in, B, are vaccinated, and C, if they have any unpopular opinions, they will first whisper them to me before they say them out loud. And then they're able to hop into my place and join the party. That sounds like what Brian Stelter's advocating for here. And again, it's just grasping at straws. There is no way to justify the fact that you don't want somebody who is going to honor people's right to speech to own a platform. So you have to do things like this, because I can imagine the people at CNN, the higher ups at CNN, are watching him and just glaringly waiting for him to slip up. Just say it. Say what we want you to say. Spout your propaganda or else, Brian. And there's no shortage of clips of Brian doing this and just nervously and uncomfortably lying to people. So it's brilliant to see this take place after this back and forth of them saying, buy your own platform and get your own place to have your conversations. I'm just soaking in it. I'm just basking in it. We have another hot take from Sean King. And I know what you're thinking. Who's Sean King? But anyways, here's his tweet. At its root, Elon Musk wanting to purchase Twitter is not about left versus right. It's about white power. The man was raised in apartheid by a white nationalist. He's upset that Twitter won't allow white nationalists to target, harass people. That's his definition of free speech. Is this considered like a black on black crime? Because Sean King is attacking an African American with this tweet. So honestly, he should be censored according to Twitter's old rules. This is amazing, amazing that no matter what happens, they will always try to grasp on to something surrounding race, something surrounding white supremacy, bigotry, patriarchy, all these fun little buzzwords and isms and obias that they like to grasp onto in order to hold onto the narrative. And guess what? This didn't hold water. The reason I'm showing you a screenshot of this tweet rather than the actual tweet itself is because it's not on Twitter anymore. Because you can't get away with saying this stuff. And you won't be able to anymore on a platform that actually honors people's right to an opinion. And I can't wait for all of this to come to fruition. Of course, I'm waiting with bated breath to see if Elon actually is a man of his word and all of these things do play out in the way that we would like them to play out. But if they do, think about the broader implication here. Because a lot of people I'm seeing in the comments of these videos and of these posts and news stories saying, well, what's the big deal? Twitter's one platform out of, you know, 10 major platforms where people are doing this stuff, and I don't know why we're cheering on some billionaire buying out this platform. Well, think about the power that Twitter has. Twitter can influence elections. It influences political thought. It influences culture. It influences what's trending in our brains, in our conversations, in our arguments and debates with our peers and family members. It has a stronghold on the American mind in a lot of ways. The people at Twitter right now, in its current board and administration, get to wake up in the morning, look at the news and what's happening, and decide what you get to hear from it. And not only that, decide the opinion and the lens that you get to hear that news from. And for so long, we have been dealing with it. The COVID narrative is a brilliant example of this. You know, Twitter has its little COVID bar when you go to the trending page and the explore page on Twitter. And throughout that is just propaganda, and in a lot of ways, false and misleading information that just leads you to the conclusion that they want you to have. And every day Twitter gets to do that to you. And millions of people use Twitter. More people than represent the U.S. population use Twitter and log in to see what's going on. And a lot of people use it as their primary news source. Is that concerning? Moderately, mildly concerning. Knowing what we know about who controls it and what they would like you to know, I would say actually more than moderately concerning. It's very concerning that people use that as their main source of news. But think about that power shifting and you actually getting a whole spectrum of opinions on a news story. Can you imagine?
It's very strange to even think that that open discourse and like a fair playing field is actually a reality we can have on social media these days, because it's been so long since it was even like an idea that you could imagine a world where there isn't suppression of views that undercut the approved narrative on social media. And now for all we can tell, that's going to be what Twitter is. And yes, that's just like, it's like utopia is here.
Yeah, we're allowed to have an opinion again. And I love seeing people on Twitter. The hashtag Elon buys Twitter is trending, and RIP Twitter, a whole spectrum of opinions. Wow, when have we ever had that on Twitter before? What a beautiful thing. And people are going out and tweeting out all the things that they couldn't say before for fear of being banned. Like, there are two genders and affirmative action is wrong, and maybe we should judge people based on the content of their character and not their skin color. And people
an ivermectin tweet out there, a couple of those.
People are feeling comfortable to say what they actually think. Can you imagine that being reality? That I can actually go on the internet and say what I would actually like to say and what I actually stand behind without fear of being completely deplatformed. And what a beautiful thing that is, to represent what America was actually founded on, instead of this mangled, disgusting, authoritarian, totalitarian, new normal that we've been so used to in today's day and age. So for me, that's why it's a big deal. And of course, I would love to see the same thing happen with Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. And that's the point that a lot of conservatives are making, that this does not mean it's the end of the battle. There's still more ground that we need to win. Sure. But this is a big win. This is huge. Because Twitter, like I said, sets the landscape in a lot of ways for the discourse that we have. It's where you see all these blue check marks. It's where a lot of our legislators and politicians are listening to people's opinions and seeing the news and looking at what's happening in the world. And for a long time, it's been very one-sided and we haven't been able to have an opinion. And now we're in a day and age that we can, hopefully, assuming that Elon Musk stands by his word, which I imagine when you put $44 billion behind that word, there's a little bit of incentive to stand behind it, especially when you are banking on people coming back to the platform and deciding to use it again after leaving. I'm wondering if we'll get a one former president back on the platform. We shall see. I know there's been back and forth, some people saying it's not going to happen, and even the former president himself saying he will not be joining. But you never know what's going to happen. I see some people begging for mean tweets. I saw Mark Levin tweet out today that he's back on Twitter and joining again. We also might see the likes of Babylon Bee, Project Veritas, and a new winning streak for Libs of TikTok, who was recently doxxed by Taylor Lorenz of The Washington Post. So I'm just excited to see what comes out of the woodwork in this new announcement and in this new deal and just how much it changed the landscape. And for all I know, it doesn't at all, but I have a feeling that it does, which leads me to the question of, really, is the pendulum swinging back for us? Because I have to think about what the left has on its side and what the left has lost. Lost the COVID narrative, because in many ways we are all back to normal. I'm even seeing people in LA going back to their normal lives, although we do have the stragglers that are holding on to the masks and the looking at everybody as germs and wearing their masks and hand sanitizer on their planes and all that fun stuff. But for the most part, people are back to normal life, and I don't think we're going to see a resurgence of this COVID narrative that is strong enough to get people back in their houses, to take them out of school, to have them close or shut down their businesses. I don't think they can rely on that anymore. BLM, for the most part, has been exposed as, you know, some mansion-buying millionaires who use your donation money for their own personal benefit and who seem to love capitalism outside of their protests of it. So the Black Lives Matter narrative and the whole race relations thing is crumbling, too. We're also seeing that in the fight against critical race theory, where parents are coming out of the woodwork to stand up for their children in public education. We're seeing this in corporations as well. People going, you know what? I don't want to work for a corporation that hates me and hates my values anymore. And I certainly don't want to be made out to be an oppressor or, with people of color, oppressed in my day-to-day workplace. I built the academic standing to be in the position that I'm in, and I'm here, and I don't want to hear that I'm a victim or somebody who's oppressing somebody else. So I feel as though that's dying, and it's very simple to let that die out because there's so much more to people than race, and I think most people with common sense can understand that. Universities are dying, not just with people who are conservative, but with people who are on the left. Conservatives because we don't want the indoctrination that comes along with the universities and the college education, and leftists because they don't want that tuition payment that comes along with it whatsoever. And it turns out the whole Student Loan Forgiveness Act is not working anymore. And it hasn't happened, even though we've gotten that promise for years and years and years on end. Where is that student loan forgiveness of those trillions of dollars that people have in debt to the U.S. government? So universities are dying, too. Really, what do they have left? I don't know. Taylor, any?
I mean, did you mention Disney and Netflix, too, that they're...
Oh, yeah. Tanking. Because it turns out people make entertainment subscriptions to be entertained. And they don't want political ideology folded in with that entertainment. As much as some fringe small group wants to be loud and fight for it and try to sneak it in there, they don't want it. Just like with CNN Plus, they don't want to pay extra money to be lied to every single month. People are done shelling out their dollars for whatever opinion or whatever narrative you want. They want their values to be represented, or at the very least to just leave values out of it as much as you can and get to the part where you entertain them and give them what they actually paid for. So all these strongholds that the left has maintained on media, entertainment, education, big tech are seemingly dwindling. And I bet that they're all struggling. I would love to have been a fly on the wall at that Twitter board meeting to see exactly what they were saying and how they came to come to this deal, because I can only imagine there were some very heated conversations surrounding allowing this man to own their platform.
Yeah, I mean, some of the biggest shareholders were like Vanguard and a Saudi prince. These are not people who are concerned with upholding the values of free speech. And money, power is more important to them than money. And so I don't think they did this voluntarily. I think they did the math and talked to their lawyers and were like, can we refuse to sell this to Elon? Or are we going to get sued? Or are we going to have to go to court over like not fulfilling our fiduciary duty to act in the best interests of the company's finances to the in the best interests of the shareholders?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's the only reason that they would give this up, because if Twitter is such an important part of the pie chart of how the mainstream narrative is upheld.
Yep.
Controlling the conversation on Twitter and the algorithm and what people see and who you can ban and who you can kick off and what stories you can bury right in front of elections. All those things are a huge part of their stranglehold over upholding the mainstream narrative. Those are in capital letters, the mainstream narrative.
Yeah.
And in addition to the Disney, and it's all over Hollywood, it's all over universities. It's all those across institutions, the left has been able to instill this ideology, and they enforce that from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
And Elon Musk taking away Twitter, that which is the de facto town square public forum for where ideas are discussed, where the news is discussed, in the Western world, especially in America, by Elon Musk taking that away from them, it makes it a lot more difficult to uphold it. You know, I thought of I was talking with Scott today, and I brought up the quote from Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's propaganda minister, and he said, if you repeat a lie enough times, often enough and loud enough, and people will get it confused with the truth. But that requires like ubiquity. You have to be able to say that everywhere and say it constantly. And now if Twitter's an open forum and people can, anything goes, and people can actually say, call out lies and speak the truth, you've got a problem if you're trying to enforce propaganda everywhere. And that's happening in the midst of all these other L's that the mainstream left is taking. And it's like, what's happening?
Yep, take the L's, ladies and gentlemen. I do want to read this. I have been reading your comments. I want to read this from Abel Campo. Ocampo. He says, lies may work for a while, but the truth will eventually rise to the top. And that seems to be the case, because we fought really hard through the censorship, through the deplatforming, through the cancel culture, to at least have one person out there telling the truth. And we were persistent. And this goes to show how important your persistence is, because in a lot of ways, these ideologues, they bank everything they have on the fact that they can demoralize you from stepping out and saying the truth as much as you possibly can, even in the wake of being canceled and punched down and pushed down every single time you try to. So big kudos to the people who were persistent on these platforms and saying, no, you can cancel me, but I'm coming back. You can cancel me, but I'm coming back. And you can suspend me, but I'm coming back. And ban me, and I'm coming back. And I'm going to say the same thing over and over and over again as loud as I can until somebody hears it. And guess who heard? A very important person. And that was Elon Musk. And after putting out that poll saying, do you think Twitter is upholding free speech, and getting over 70% of people saying no, look at the move that was made. This is why your persistence and standing up and coming out of the closet with whatever values you have is really, really important. And people don't recognize how important it is. So many people are so happy, or at least complacent, in being silent. And your voice matters. It does, even though you may not think it does whatsoever. It truly does. And Dennis has this great speech that he does, and he closes out by saying, you can be one of three people. You can be a fighter who is constantly out there taking on the battles and fighting as hard as they can and using all your energy to do that. Or you can be somebody who supports the fighters, which is just as important, because everybody who does this needs support. They need people pushing for them. They need people advocating for them. Or you can be the third person, which most people are the third person. And that's the person who does nothing. They're completely apathetic. They sit on the sidelines. They watch. They may have their opinions, but they don't state them. And they don't support people who have their opinions. And that's why, in a lot of ways, we lose. And when we lose things like freedom of speech and our First Amendment right, everybody loses. And I hope that a lot of people on the left are going to wake up to that reality, too. When we lose freedom of speech, you lose freedom of speech. You will be next. It will not last. Eventually, there is a new enemy, and as soon as they are done with us, they will go to you. That is how this endless cycle of authoritarian and totalitarian belief works. They don't want power or dominion over just one side. They want dominion over everybody. And you might think that you're safe because they're espousing the views that you happen to have, but sooner or later, they will be knocking at your door as well. and censoring you off of Twitter. So I'm just so happy to see what is going on. And I think that's where we're going to close out the PragerU stream for today. So if you're watching on PragerU on YouTube or Facebook, head over to Amala Epinobi, /unapologetic. It's in the description down below. We'll also link it in the chat. And we're going to continue our discussion over there. We're going to be talking about what the left has left to use in their arguments for their ideology, what we think their next move is, and really, can they win at this point with everything going on? Plus, what do we have in common as individuals in these representing these different sets of values? So head over to my channel, Amala Epinobi, and we're going to discuss that. Okay, guys. Welcome. I'm glad you're here on the new channel. If you are here and you haven't yet subscribed, please do so. We're putting out multiple videos every single day talking about trending topics, social issues, culture, pop culture, entertainment, anything you can think of. So please subscribe, like, leave a comment down below about how you feel with this news coming out today about Twitter. Is it affecting your life at all? Do you simply not care? Do you think this is a turning point for us on this side of the aisle? So Taylor and I were talking earlier about what the left has left to use and speculating about how they're going to uphold the narrative that they've had so far. I want to show a recent speech that former president Barack Obama did, although he might be the current president, former president Barack Obama did, where he wanted to highlight disinformation's threat to democracy. Now, you can already imagine what his opinion is on what constitutes disinformation. I imagine it looks a little different than our opinions on that. But here's a short clip from that speech.
For more and more of us, search and social media platforms aren't just our window into the internet. They serve as our primary source of news and information. No one tells us that the window is blurred, subject to unseen distortions.
By who? Who has blurred the window, Mr. Barack Obama? And who is distorting this window that we're all looking through? If you could please follow up with that answer, I would really greatly appreciate it.
And subtle manipulations. All we see is a constant feed of content where useful, factual information and happy diversions and cat videos.
Thank you for the good old knee slapper. You're always good for that during your presidency.
Flow alongside lies, conspiracy theories, junk science, quackery, white supremacists,
there it is.
Tracks, misogynist screeds.
There it is.
And over time, we lose our capacity to distinguish between fact, opinion, and wholesale fiction.
You know, I love that this tactic is to really sprinkle in kernels of truth in the things that you're saying while completely and utterly missing the target. I also wish that we could start a drinking game on this channel. With every leftist video that we react to, if we hear the words white supremacy, patriarchy, misogyny, sexism, or racism, we just take a shot of whatever liquor is closest to us. We would be blacked out within 2 minutes of starting that game, but alas, it would be an experience nonetheless. Now, he talks about how it becomes difficult to dissect what you're hearing and to figure out what is fact, what is fiction, what is opinion. And yes, that is very true. But what he should also state is that he banks everything he does on that, on your inability to find out what the truth is, what your facts are, and what is fiction. They are very much well aware of that reality. And it actually is part of a brilliant tactic that they use, all in the scope of ideological subversion, which is a process that takes place that by the end of it has made you completely incapable, despite the abundance of information that is available to us in our current society. You are completely incapable of deducing what is fact and what is fiction. That's why you're constantly chasing a ball that seems to change colors, or change names, or change dates, or change realities, where one thing is conspiracy theory, and then two years later, it's truth. And one thing is called critical race theory, and then 2 weeks later, it's called diversity, equity, and inclusion. And at one day, women are the victims of patriarchy, and then on the next, men can be women. See, this is what they do. And then suddenly, the window is blurred, as he would say. and you can't see through it quite clearly anymore, and things pop up, and it's always their opinions, and everything that we conservatives say, or anybody on the opposite side of the aisle, or even classical liberals now, anything that they say is a dog whistle. It's not true. They're just blowing that dog whistle to confuse you and to set you on a new trail when they have the path to truth, the light, the way. So I would love Obama, if he would give a little bit more clarity on the fact that he has used that as a tactic for quite some time to make us all disillusioned and demoralized in our pursuit of truth. Let's continue and listen what he has to say.
Or maybe we just stop caring. And all of us, including our children, learn that if you want to rise above the crowd, above the din, if you want to be liked and shared, and yes, go viral, then peddling controversy, outrage, even hate, often gives you an edge.
That's like the mission statement for CNN, ABC, and MSNBC. Peddling hate and controversy, but okay.
Now, it's true, tech companies and social media platforms are not the only distributors of toxic information. Promise me. I promise you. I spent a lot of time in Washington. In fact, some of the most outrageous content on the web originates from traditional media.
That's true.
What social media platforms have done, though, thanks to their increasing market dominance and their emphasis on speed, is accelerate the decline of newspapers and other traditional news sources. There are still brand name newspapers and magazines, not to mention network news broadcasts, NPR, other outlets that have adapted to the new digital environment while maintaining the highest standards of journalistic integrity.
I'm going to call BS on that. And notice how he just said NPR and he goes, and others. He couldn't think of another one that actually represents standards of integrity, and certainly NPR is not one of those examples.
Yeah, which cable network were you referring to that upholds journalistic standards these days?
Like, what? He couldn't think of one, and that's why it helps to be an eloquent speaker and somebody with charisma and charm like Obama has, because you can simply not come up with examples or evidence for what you're saying and then tell a joke about cat videos and people laugh it off and move on, which it has helped him his entire career in just making baseless claims and essentially doing nothing. But yeah, it's just wonderful to hear, of all people, President Barack Obama talk to us about disinformation and the threat that it poses to our democracy.
Yeah, it's like grasping at straws. Like, disinformation for these people is code word for information or perspectives, ideas that undercuts the narrative that I'm trying to push and the ideas that I want pushed and the way I want people to think.
Right.
Disinformation is things that undercut my narrative. And it's the same echoes of Brian Stelter. Oh, people shouldn't just be getting information from anywhere. He said they should come to credible newsrooms. And he said you don't want to go to the party that's thrown by where there's no rules. And they're like afraid of free speech. They're threatened by free speech. But
yep.
Censorship is always going to be a much greater threat to democracy. They pose free speech and misinformation as a threat to democracy, but censorship will always be a much greater threat.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime you're not having civil discourse around an issue or even allowing people to oppose or represent something dissident, you are failing as a leader, and you are posing a threat to democracy, plain, simple, clear. Because if you truly cared about democracy, if you truly cared about your country, you would care to come to a proper solution that is decided with as many opinions and different solutions as possible, because that's how we find the truth. Jordan Peterson said this: dialogue is the avenue to truth, and in a lot of ways it is a very true statement. If we are not able to parse out the different options that we have or the different ways that somebody can see the world, we will not find truth, because you're not allowing different avenues of even finding it or looking at something from a different perspective. And that's what we've been lacking for so long. I want to read one of the comments here. Nobody listens, says, journalists aren't a myth. They are dinosaurs that don't exist anymore. And that seems to be true. Oh my goodness. You want to find journalists, you go to like Substack these days. You can't find them on any legacy media. You can't find them on any mainstream, if we even want to call it that anymore. And that's why people are not listening to them anymore. That's why people are not turning on the news. They're not buying newspapers. They're certainly not going to Washington Post or the New York Times to listen to what they have to say, because they don't trust in these institutions. And if you don't trust in these institutions, what's the bother of even looking at them? They are in most ways garbage. And even if they do go back to journalistic integrity and have this rebirth, are people going to be able to rebuild that trust anymore? It's sort of like an abusive relationship. If suddenly you're not an abuser anymore and you come back and you go, I promise, I'm not going to hit you again. I promise, it was just the alcohol and now I'm sober. Is she really going to believe you? Eh, maybe a few might. A few might go back to that and say, you know what, I'm willing to trust in this institution again. I'm willing to re-enter this relationship. But guess what? A lot of people aren't. And they're going to find other boyfriends, and their other boyfriends are PragerU and Daily Wire and Tim Pool and Joe Rogan, and they're going, you know, my relationship is much healthier with this guy. I actually trust what he's saying, and I trust that even if he's not saying something that's completely true, he's trying to find the truth, and he will be open with me when he misspeaks, or when he says something that's false, or when he has a misguided opinion on something. That's what people want. They want raw, real individuals talking to them about their lives, who in some ways are just as confused as they are and just trying to find their way. That's why mainstream media is legacy media now. That's why we're seeing new front runners, new pioneers in this movement. That's why podcasts are getting more watches than CNN, because people don't want the lies. They don't want the mistrust anymore. So what does the left have left? And this is all speculation here and where I think they're going to go from here on out. There are a few things that they still maintain and have intact. TikTok is one of them, which unfortunately is just guiding this younger generation into the cesspool of ideology that they have a stronghold on that platform. Every time I go on TikTok, I see some crazy leftist who's like, I don't know, 16 to 25, saying BS, but saying it so, it's the confidence for me, saying it so confidently, and it has like millions and millions of likes, and that's where young people are.
Yeah, a lot of young impressionable minds. I mean, that they're, I learned from you, you know, how the young generation thinks now. Does the generation after Gen Z even have a name yet? Are you still Gen Z if you're a teenager right now?
I have no idea.
But it's a whole different world. And they're, a lot of the way that they're thinking is being shaped on TikTok, and these influencers are there, and that is still a platform that's dominated by the left, and they are in control of that algorithm. How many times have you been banned now?
Oh, 3 or 4 times permanently, so they say. But yeah, so very, very often.
PragerU's on our third account there.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see how many people use TikTok, and look into it. It's available in over 150 countries and has over 1 billion users. So where we're looking at, what did I say for Twitter? Like 200 million or something like that? Or 400 million? Yeah, because more than the U.S. population. So 400 million on Twitter, 1 billion users on TikTok. Of course, I don't know how many of those are from the U.S. It looks like has been downloaded over 200 million times in the United States alone. So, and it's an ever-growing platform. We're seeing this new sort of celebrity coming from TikTok, where it's not about being an A-list movie star or anything, or a pop star, or coming out with fashion lines, or a model anymore. It's about being a TikToker. And of course, where TikTok makes people famous for, I don't know, dancing and teenagers dating and all this random stuff, it's packaged with leftist ideology. And as soon as Black Lives Matter makes a resurgence, suddenly all the famous TikTok dancers are saying BLM and putting their fists up. So it's an ingenious way to get to a younger generation, establish a form of trust with them that comes with these daily videos that people are putting out on the internet. So you go, oh, that's just my friend Kirsten on TikTok who posts every day. And then, oops, leftist messaging. Oops, more leftist messaging. So that girl Kirsten that I really trust just happens to be leftist. I love that. That's great. And that's where young people are being influenced. So I see that being a problem, which is why I remain on the platform and why I continue to make videos. And you can follow me on TikTok at @TheAmalEpinoe if you guys would like to, if you are on that platform as well. So that's where I see young people getting most of their influence, which is so concerning considering the amount of garbage on that platform. But then we also have the woke capitalism. So there's a lot of leftists who are still in control of these major corporations. Now they're being ousted, as we've seen with Disney and Netflix and Nike and things like that. But they still maintain their stronghold. And with that comes a significant amount of money and lobbying power for what they can do in the future. So I'm curious to see if there becomes a massive shift in how we treat these corporations in our capitalist society and if we decide to stop using them. And I think we've seen that with Netflix, what they're projected to lose another 2 million subs between now and June. I wonder if it's enough to hit them where it hurts and make them reconfigure the way that they talk to us.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be motivation outside of money, but you would imagine that profit is the primary motivator for these companies. Now, we could get into the Great Reset and how many of these massive companies are signed up to the World Economic Forum's plan, and you can go and check that out on their website because there's hundreds of them listed that are extremely prominent corporations in the United States that are, boom, check, sign me up for your Great Reset, Mr. Klaus Schwab, you German villain, you bald-headed German villain. Please sign me up for your future where I own everything and everyone else owns nothing and I'm happy and we tell them that they're happy every single day through our drones that surveil their houses. So again, are they placing all their eggs in that basket of, I don't care if we have consumers anymore, I don't care if we get profit from our natural consumer base because we have this Great Reset that's going to be ushered in, and I will reap everything that I've sown in subscribing to this plan and this, what, hopeful analysis for a better future is one of those, what was it, a Netherlands politician said? A hopeful analysis for the future.
Is that what they called it?
Yeah, they got called out in Parliament for saying that. So that's concerning. I know I keep using the word concerning. That's a little freaky.
It is. And you think about, I mean, even Twitter, what like 5% of it or something was owned by Vanguard between mm-hmm. Vanguard and BlackRock, just the influence that they have. And we know they're in bed with this whole woke capitalism thing with ESGs and whatnot. So,
yes.
I mean, I think that is yet another stronghold. Yeah. As you're pointing out, that the left has to rely on. But it just seems in general, though, that their cultural power is weakening, especially coming out of all the hysteria over the pandemic and all the hysteria over the BLM time. And now with Twitter being changed, and it just seems like I'm cautiously optimistic about the direction things are going, but there certainly are, they've been in power and had all this institution of power for a long time. And something does need to be done about the BlackRocks and the Vanguards and the World Economic Forum stuff.
Yes, because it seems like I don't want to get baited into thinking that we've won something when really there's just this larger plan afoot and mm-hmm. they're okay with losing ground where we think it matters because they have ground somewhere else with the Klaus Schwabs and the Justin Trudeaus and the CCPs of the world. So that is something that I want to keep an eye out for and see if the messaging around the World Economic Forum and this Great Reset gets stronger and if these corporations back it stronger than they are doing so right now, because that will confirm for me that maybe they just aren't too concerned with their consumer bases anymore, because it seems that, again, these corporations are moving in lockstep. We saw Twitter fall in users and advertisement. We've seen Netflix fall. We've seen CNN fall. We've seen Nike fall. We're seeing this drop in consumer base, and the corporations aren't really responding. Disney being another one. They're not responding yet to this really outcry from people saying, I'm not going to use or patronize your business anymore if you keep doing this. So I'm waiting to hear if they're going to respond to this and actually make changes. And if they don't, what's the greater plan here? Because I imagine they're not just going to sit idly by as they hemorrhage money. So we'll see that. We're also seeing the left move forward with these LGBTQ issues, because we, at first it was critical race theory, then they got caught and Chris Rufo found them on that, and critical race theory became part of our general conversation, and it was featured on legacy media and all these podcasts, and all these conservative commentators were bringing it to light and exposing them, and now it's shifted. So now we're not on critical race theory anymore, we're on gender theory, and that's in the schools, and they're fighting that, and they want to teach your kids about sexuality and the possibility of there being a spectrum of gender rather than this two-gendered binary. So this seems to be the new fight. How long can you keep a grasp on something that sounds so ridiculous? Not long, I would imagine. And I'm going to go as far as to say that even parents on the left are going to be like, hey, I want to have this conversation with my kids. It's not your job, they, them. It's my job. And even if I support what you're saying, you don't get to do that in the classroom. I want my kid to come back from school knowing that 2 + 2 = 4, not that 2 doesn't mean 2 genders anymore because there's like 34 or 27 or whatever number there is now. So how long can that fight really last? I can't imagine much longer, especially when we're seeing these extreme instances of what these kids are being taught, that is just so crazy to me. I mean, sex scenes and scenarios being played out in classrooms. We're seeing a college in Salt Lake City with a porn class now that you can take. How long does that hold water?
I don't think it's sustainable. I think it's a massive house of cards. And, you know, when you're trying to enforce something that contradicts freedom and contradicts the truth, you need a stranglehold on power. You need a stranglehold on information. And again, the them not having control over Twitter and all these other things that we're seeing with parents getting involved at the local level, fighting against CRT in schools, and Disney and Netflix, you know, the market responding to them, they're losing some of that that institutional power, and it's going to be hard. And this is where it's good to be on the side of truth and freedom. Because ultimately, truth will win out, and it can. And I'm reminded as we're talking about this of the Soviet Union and the collapse of the Soviet Union, and how it happened was they had the whole power structure was built on a web of lies and keeping misinformation and keeping dissidents suppressed. And over the years, there was just lies on top of lies on top of lies, and people, they just couldn't uphold it anymore because it right. was so detached from the truth, so detached from reality, and so detached from freedom. And ultimately, people want to be free, and people want the truth on some visceral level. And if you orient society toward those things, then you'll find success. But if you're trying to suppress that and deprive people of freedom, you have to, you know, you got to be North Korea and have that level of control. And again, I wonder if today is just one of those seminal moments where the pendulum is swinging a little bit in the favor of freedom, free speech, and truth seeking. And I'm cautiously optimistic again, yep. because it's like taking the mask off on the plane. You're like, can I really do this? You know, it's right. like, is this okay? But that's kind of how today feels. It's like, I feel like Robin Williams coming out of, you know, in what was it, Jumanji? And he's like, what year is it? And he's like, covering his beard. I'm like, what year is it? Is it people can speak freely on Twitter? We can take our masks off on planes? Like, what world are we living in?
Yeah. I would love to think that is coinciding with people waking up from just being lied to this entire time, and them going, wait a second, I can actually take my mask off on this plane and I'm not gonna die. Which, weird, we didn't talk about this, but how quickly people were comfortable with just, oh yeah, government said so. Yeah. Mask is off.
That was terrifying. And
suddenly we don't wear masks on plane anymore. I mean, it perfectly encapsulates everything we've been saying all along, but just to see it in front of your eyes so quickly. Just a pilot getting on and saying, guys, you can take your masks off now, the CDC says so, and all of a sudden everybody who's been fighting for it tooth and nail, saying you're a grandma killer, you're incompassionate, you want people to die, is just like, oh okay, daddy government told me I could.
Yeah.
And he gave me a butterscotch, so I'm back to being normal now and leading my normal life, the one that those other people fought for, but we won't talk about that. Also, we won't hold the people accountable that stripped me of this for the past 2 years. Crazy, crazy stuff. Here's a comment from Deborah Fields. She says, their symbolism is becoming their downfall. You are right about the lines becoming more blurred and the light is overwhelming the darkness. That is a great point. And here's what I think might be happening. And again, cautiously optimistic here. there are steps to subverting people's ideology and creating this fake, figmented reality that is by no means based in objective truth. And one of those steps, in fact, the final step of that process is normalization. So looking at everybody who's living in this figmented reality and telling them, this is normal. This is normal. Guys play on the girls' team. That's normal. We separate people by race. That is totally normal. We wear t-shirts that say the future is female. That's totally normal. We hire people based on their race and their gender. That's totally normal. And doctors no longer assign sex at birth. You guys decide that when you're like a four-year-old or something. Totally normal. And maybe they were too quick with that step to start coming out and saying all of this is normal and putting it in media and putting it in the schools and being so bold-faced with the things that they believe. Maybe they were too quick and should have kept sneaking it under the rug like they were doing, because now people are seeing it and going, wait a second, I was not ready to normalize that. We need to talk about this. And I hope that is the light that is being shed on all of this, and that is eventually what is going to destroy this way of thinking. We were going to talk about what we have in common, but I might actually use that for a whole nother episode because it seems like a longer conversation than we have time for today. But I have, like I said at the beginning of this episode, been seeing videos of people that you could watch and get to the end of the video and what they're saying and their commentary on the current state of things. And you would not know whether or not they were representing a conservative belief or a leftist belief. And I actually posted one of these videos on my Instagram story. Go and follow me on Instagram because I do post the things that I'm watching, the things that I'm seeing, and I do give commentary on them. And I got a lot of responses from conservatives saying, well, why are you posting leftist speak on here? And then I'd get some from other prominent conservatives saying, absolutely clap for this. I believe in this. So there seems to be some common ground that we share. And I think I should do a whole episode dedicated to the common ground that we share, because when you watch that, it does dial back some of the outrage that we might feel in these times. It does connect us a little bit more in the wake of all this division and all of this polarity, that there are seemingly things and problems that we all recognize and we actually have similar solutions and ideas for. And I think that is a beautiful, wonderful thing that doesn't get enough airtime. So we will discuss that tomorrow. In the comments down below, I want to know from you guys, is this a pivotal moment? Is Elon buying Twitter a pivotal day? Is this a most auspicious day for us on this side of the aisle and people who value freedom and liberty? Or is this just another Monday? Are we just going through the motions and this is just a blip on our screens? Let me know down below. Do you think this constitutes us winning in any way? And do you think the pendulum is swinging back? If you have any other thoughts, things I didn't discuss, things you would have liked me to have said or explored, comment that down below as well. Also, like and subscribe. We're trying to get some subscribers on this channel. So do that. Turn on the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. And I do watch your comments in the chat. Thank you so much for all of your support in this new channel. We are so excited to be doing this show for you. If you have any constructive criticism too on things or new segments you'd like to see, things you wish we did differently on the show, please let me know that as well, because we do take all of your criticism, if it's constructive, to heart. And we like to take that into account every single day when we do the show. Is there anything else that I'm missing? Yes, this will be the last week that we stream half and half on PragerU. So make sure you're subscribed to this channel for that as well, because eventually we will be only streaming on this channel alone. And Friday will be a day that we do a weekly review on both PragerU and on this channel. So make sure you're subscribed here or else you will miss the show. And I love seeing your comments. I love hearing from you guys. I love having a back and forth discussion about what is happening today. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern to talk to you guys, and I cannot wait. I will see you then. Bye-bye.